This is the Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. Have your say on the issues that matter to you. Call now 0345 602 0025. Email radio@rnib.org.uk.
Welcome to the Daily Connect podcast for Monday, the 21st of January 2019. Our host, Stephen Scott, is off for the remainder of the week, so you will have a selection of hosts for the next few days, starting with me, Chris Wallace, this Monday. And since this Monday is known as Blue Monday, well, we are trying to cheer you up. It's supposed to be the most saddest or depressing day of the year, a day that most people look to try to book their holidays. So we're checking out Sea Able Holidays. Sea Able Holidays are accessible access holidays tailor-made for blind and partially sighted people. Roland Myers will be speaking to Emma Shepherd about that. Also, Nikki Kelly is an RNIB community facilitator who put together the See the Funny Side project last year. We are doing a retrospective of that project and chatting to participants, Tafsila Khan, Paul Jones and Lucy Hayward, as we look forward to See the Funny Side 2019 taking place in March of this year. Also, how protected are you from the dangers of carbon monoxide poisoning? Simon Pauly will be chatting to Zoe Hadley, Campaign Director for Project Shout, who want to raise awareness about the dangers of the dangerous, colourless, odourless and tasteless gas, carbon monoxide. That's coming up on the Daily Connect today.
The Daily Connect podcast.
But before that, Blue Monday is thought to be the one day when Brits are more down in the dumps than any other day of the year. More than just a hashtag, it's the result of an actual formula thought up by psychologists. It's a day when people start to think seriously about getting away from it all. Accessible access holidays tailor-made for blind and partially sighted people, Roland Myers has been speaking to Emma Shepherd from Sea Able Holidays Abroad.
Sea Able Holidays are described as accessible active holidays. They're tailor-made for blind and partially sighted people in various holiday destinations abroad, with three more added for 2019. We spoke to Emma Shepherd, whose job description at Sea Able is holiday tailoress, about their bespoke holidays, and first we discussed their three new holiday destinations.
We've got three brand new destinations, which are Lanzarote, Amsterdam and Thailand. So that gives us a total of seven destinations now. So that's also including the current running destinations, which are Sicily, Slovenia, Cyprus and Rome.
When it comes to finding a holiday that you can make sure is accessible to a blind or partially sighted person, I presume the challenges are the same wherever these holidays are.
Absolutely. So we have very specific requirements for each destination. Firstly being we provide a local chaperone in the destination and they're all fully trained with visual awareness training. So it's all about finding the right people. And then also about finding the right accessible activities in the destination. So that can be anything from feeding and washing elephants in Thailand to skiing in Slovenia, pottery in Cyprus. We want to make sure that they're all accessible for everybody that comes on one of our holidays.
When you mentioned the activities, do you see those as a nice kind of addition to the holiday or are they kind of an essential part of the holiday? So do the activities kind of make the holiday?
Well, it's completely up to you. It's a tailor-made holiday. So the activities, of course, are an additional plus to the holiday, but it's exactly how you want it to be. So you tell us which destination you would like to go to, for how long, and what you would like to do on that holiday. And then we just go away, do all the planning and organising, and come back to you with a sample itinerary. And it's as easy as that, really. We just have to check availability. And it also gives you the opportunity to travel independently. You can go as a couple, a family, a small group of friends. So it's not that you're joining other people on the holiday.
So when people first get in touch with you then, can they tell you a little about their vision impairment and therefore what they're comfortable doing, what they may be less comfortable doing, and certainly define any help that they may want and also the fact that they may want to be as independent as possible and not have much help? That's all discussed at the outset, is it?
Absolutely. It's a discussion that we have throughout the booking process. We try and be as clear as we possibly can. And in regards to the local guide who's with you on the holiday, dependent on how much independence you do want to have, that's organised in the booking process as well. So it's very much dependent on what you tell us you want, really. And even when you're on the holiday and you have the guide there, if you, for example, want to stay at the beach by yourself, you can simply just tell the guide to come back at a certain time, or you can call them when you want to be picked up to take him back to your accommodation. It's very flexible and it's very much your holiday.
Now, it's often we hear the small things that can make the difference between a holiday being enjoyable and not so enjoyable. How much detail can you check in advance that accommodation really is accessible for a blind or partially sighted person?
Absolutely, and I completely agree with everything you say. It really is the little things that make the difference. And again, because our holidays, we want to make sure that we're enforcing the confidence. We will go above and beyond to make sure that where we offer is accessible. So any hotel or apartments that we would put forward, we would have one of the local guides in the destination go and ensure the accessibility. So, for example, checking that the rooms are accessible, up to standard. And then when the client goes on the holiday, we do a full orientation. So the guide would go through the room, explain where everything is, and just making sure that everyone feels comfortable and happy with where they're going to be, hopefully enjoying a wonderful holiday. As I mentioned, the guides are fully trained, so they have a full awareness of everything that is needed to ensure that confidence.
And you've recently introduced your brochure information in accessible format, specifically for vision impaired people, I think.
Absolutely. We can offer our new brochure in many different formats. We can either provide it in large print with pictures, audio CD, a braille brochure, an online PDF, or an online Word document. And these all can be requested either by giving us a call directly, or you can request online via our website.
And that website address is www.seable, spelled SEABLE.co.uk. You can, as we heard, also phone for more information or to request a brochure, and the number to call is 020 3375 6947. That's 020 3375 6947. Lines are open from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Tuesday to Saturday, and from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays. Or you can, if you prefer, email Emma Shepherd at emma@seable.co.uk. And as Emma Shepherd made very clear, all their holidays are priced individually depending on what the holiday maker chooses, like whether they opt for staying in a villa, an apartment, a hotel, or bed and breakfast accommodation. But just to give you a couple of examples, in the last quarter of this year, a 4-night, 5-day stay in Amsterdam for 2 people in a 4-star hotel with breakfast, daily excursions or activities, and the services of a local guide throughout costs £850 per person. And a 7-night, 8-day stay in Lanzarote in May or June of this year for 2 people, staying in a 4-star hotel with a variety of activities of your choice with a local guide with a car for the whole holiday, costs £1,099 per person. And of course, all their 2019 holidays with prices are in the brochure, which, as we heard, is now available in several accessible formats.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Nikki Kelly is an RNIB community facilitator who wants to make you laugh. In fact, she wants you to make her laugh. Nikki organised the recent See the Funny Side project with comedian Georgie Morrell. The RNIB initiative gave participants with sight loss the ability to take to the comedy stage and perform a full routine after only a week of workshops with a professional stand-up comedian. Listen now as Nikki chats to 3 of the participants, Paul Jones, Lucy Hayward and Tafsila Khan.
Are you ready for your next act?
Yes!
Just before that, I've come back to mention the work is on bad language.
What?
There you go. Okay, so up next, give it up for your next act.
You're listening to R&IB Connect Radio with me, Nikki Kelly. We put on an event for blind and partially sighted people called See the Funny Side, which gave the community the opportunity to learn how to write and perform a stand-up comedy routine. And today you can hear me chatting to three of the participants, Paul Jones, Lucy Haywood and Tafsila Khan, about how that was for them.
Now, I've been putting myself up for a lot of youth projects lately and I always seem to get picked. And the other day I was wondering whether this was because my application forms are so good, or is it because I tick so many of the boxes? Female, tick. Ethnic minority, tick. Disabled, tick. The one that stumps me though is the one with the sexual orientation. And I'm sorry ladies, I'm not a lesbian. If I was to be a lesbian though, I was wondering what kind of woman I'd go for. And this came to me very quickly, and it's quite disturbing. Because this lady looks a lot like myself. Now, for the sighted people in the audience, you've already guessed when I came up on stage who I'm talking about. For the rest of you, I'm talking about Jennifer Lopez.
Could I ask, what made you apply to do See the Funny Side, Lucy?
I'm a real comedy fan and I've been really interested in getting involved in stand-up for a while, and I was actually looking up training courses and, you know, in building my confidence and getting myself on stage and doing something along these lines, and then I got invited to join See the Funny Side and I thought, oh, this looks exciting, so I thought I'll apply for it and see if I get on, and thankfully I did. I was really pleased. Yeah, it was really exciting and really fun because I love being on stage and I'm used to working in theatre, so I just thought doing a bit of stand-up would be really fun and really interesting and a different perspective.
So what about you, Paul?
Lighter side of having a disability with a visual impairment, I wanted to put the picture out there that we were still capable, although obviously visually impaired, that we could do everything everyone else did. I was making jokes on a daily basis about my eyesight issue and the difficulties that we have, and the opportunity came along to do in stage and I thought, why not? So I'm glad I got the chance.
What about you, Tafsila?
I have to say this came out of the blue for me even, so I kind of don't, in a way, have an answer to that question. I have a friend that's in theatre, Beth House, who runs an inclusive theatre company here in Wales, and she actually mentioned it to me and said I should go for it. And I think, use comedy on a daily basis with my visual impairment. I think mainly with people that are sighted, to kind of make them feel comfortable and just to, like Paul said, make them feel like, oh, they're just the same as us, and there's, you know, you don't need to walk on eggshells, and they can be funny and they can swear. And so I've never been on stage before, apart from what I've done in school. And yet theatre and comedy and that, for me, had always had the door closed on it. I never ever thought I could do anything in that way. But this has really, ironically, opened my eyes to a lot more things that I can do and just really helped my confidence. So I'm glad I did it. I think the two things that I thought probably pushed me into doing it was that it was just a new year and I had just had my birthday and she suggested it, and I thought, oh well, she believes in me, so maybe I am funny. So I thought, go on and I'll give it a go. But I didn't actually think I was going to get through, so I thought, I'm not that kind of person that likes regretting things, so I thought, well, I can apply, and the next time she asks me, I'll just say, yeah, I applied but I didn't get through. And then I did get through, and then that was it. I didn't have a good enough reason not to do it, so I thought, what the hell, I'll just do it.
Brilliant. So what were your expectations of See the Funny Side? What did you hope to get out of it?
For me, I think it was just trying something new and meeting other people that were visually impaired. I know a few, but the main kind of people that if I go into organisations, they're always really old, and I don't mind old people, but sometimes I'd like to meet other people that have got either children and that are parents that are visually impaired, or just people around my age, you know, see how they handle things, and, you know, and to help other people with suggestions, or just to kind of get to know other people, really. That was my main thing, was driving me, I think, and just to try something new.
I didn't really know what to expect, but I was quite excited about coming to work with Georgie, who ran the sessions, because I'd looked her up online and I was there thinking, oh, that would have been really good. I was quite excited to work, seeing how she worked and her ways, and just getting to meet other people who are interested in that and seeing what kind of comedy they brought and how they performed and what kind of methods they used. I was really excited about that, and then being able to just kind of work out my own routine. It was really, really interesting experience.
Same as Lucy, I weren't sure what to expect. What I wanted and what I got were two different things. What I wanted was a small expectation, ended up with a really big one. It was fun to sort of, if you like, being locked in a room with everyone else that has different stories and just flying off each other, really, bouncing off each other with ideas that made me, when I walked out of the room, think, oh, yeah, that does happen. So, yeah, it was really good.
How do you guys? Can you all see me? Can you all see me?
Yes!
That's good, because I can't see you. Leg in a pleasure. Right, I lost my sight 2 years ago in the space of a sneeze. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? Not as crazy as it was when I looked on Facebook the other morning to realise a guy had sneezed, held his nose and blew a hole in the back of his throat. I thought I was the lucky one. I miss many things. I've just said I can't see yous all now. I miss curbs. I have a lamppost jump out of me. I'm not the greatest blind person. Selective, really. The reason I'm selective is daytime I go out without my cane. Have you ever seen a man do Hong Hong Fui when a lamppost has jumped out of him? Now, that's
so, Paul, just on that, how did you find performing your jokes? How did you feel being up there on that stage?
I was shaped more on that stage than I did walking with my cane at night time. and that's with the lights on. It was brilliant. The crowd were fantastic. Obviously, the people that I worked with were just immense. Made me really feel like part of the crowd, that, you know, I weren't the individual on my own. We all pushed each other. It was a fantastic night. Yeah, it was fantastic. That's all I can say, really.
What about you, Lucy?
I really enjoyed it, but it went really fast. We were told to do 5 minutes, and I got up and I went to do my performance. And then I had a 3-month-old child at the time, and he heckled me, and my 5 minutes were taken up with him heckling me and me responding. And I didn't even get to start my set properly, but it was brilliant. The crowd really responded really well, and it was just lovely.
So I'm here now, and actually what I was thinking was, as this is VIP, sorry, that's Corin, shh, 14 weeks old, he really needs to learn this. He can sit through an hour theatre piece, but 5 minutes of comedy, mate, it's my time. But yeah, so what I thought I'd do is a bit of audio description. So actually, could I just have a little, can we see how many people are VIP in here? Could you pick your hands up? Oh, sorry, I can only see them if you move your mouth. Could you please give me a shout?
It was really good fun and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I will say your son was probably the best heckler I've ever witnessed in my life. It was so perfectly timed. It's almost as if you planned that.
He does that when I go out now. He just squeaks.
I'll take him everywhere. So what about you, Casilla? How did you feel being up there on that stage?
Again, like Paul said, it was amazing. And like Lucy said, it did go really fast. Like I could have stayed up there. I was really enjoying it once I got up there. I think I was more nervous for the actual performance. But once I'd done my rehearsal with Georgie, after that, I just was so looking forward to getting on the stage and performing. Just a brilliant experience. And getting that feedback straight away from the audience was really good. And yeah, just performing, even though we were all doing our own performance, having the support of the other guys was like really good. And it was just nice, you know, atmosphere all around. It was really good. I was the middle child, but I had the monopoly on the attention because I was the only one with the eye condition. Till she came along. Not only does she make me share the middle, she's also got the eye condition. There is one good thing about her though. She makes me look good. She's always doing embarrassing things. The other day she goes to H&M looking for a coat. And she found this coat on a mannequin she liked the look of. So she's feeling it up like we do. Looking how it gets fastened, how many pockets it's got. And the next minute she knows the mannequin starts moving. Shopping for jeans.
Beat the Funny Side is back. 2019 in the East Midlands at Theatre Royal in Nottingham on 23rd and 30th of March. Beat the Funny Side is an initiative from RNIB delivered by me, Georgie Morrell. We are offering blind and partially sighted people the opportunity to learn to write and perform a stand-up comedy routine. I will deliver a one-day workshop on the 23rd of March on how to write and perform a comedy routine before we will all perform on the 30th of March to a live audience. To apply, you must be over 16 and be blind or partially sighted. Applications is dead easy. All you need to do is email us at connect@rnib.org.uk or call us on 0303 123 5555 and have your funniest joke ready and tell us why you want to take part. Application closed on the 24th of February, 2019.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
All of you seemed so natural up on that stage and you all got some really big laughs. Were you worried that people weren't necessarily going to react that well to your jokes, or were you confident from the moment you got up there and were really confident in the set that you did?
Well, I just imagine that they couldn't see me like I couldn't see them. No, seriously, it was one of them moments, blinking, you miss it. No, not in the slightest. Part of me was glad that the sort of the 5 minutes was up. But once, obviously, if there was a longer set, then you get into the swing of things and you just, like Lucy said, you get carried away. You can get carried away and really enjoy it more than you're expecting to.
What about you, Tassina? Because again, you were just so natural up there on that stage. It, you know, I felt like I had to drag some of you guys off because you were so good.
Yeah, I think after the workshop and Georgie's help with my confidence skyrocketed, just in every aspect of my life, I'd say, not just in the comedy. So I think by the performance day, because I practiced in front of my family a bit and I was quite confident, I thought, well, they got to have to laugh at this, and if they don't laugh, there's a problem with them, not me.
Yeah.
So we're like, what Georgie really said really helped me when she said in the workshop that you don't owe anything to the audience. I think that took a lot of pressure off me. So I just thought, well, yeah, I'm going to do it. My performance is what I want to put out there. And yeah, the back of my head, I did think, yeah, they're going to find this funny. There's no way you can't find that funny.
It was hilarious. So what about you, Lucy? What are your, because you were so natural and you could really tell that you had the experience of theatre, and so was that really easy and natural for you to make the transition?
That's just because I'm loud. No, well, I set a timer for myself because I knew that once I got on stage, I'd lose complete track of time unless I had a bell to go off. So I set myself a 5 minute timer and I kind of ran in and came on stage and did my whole set. But it's just once you get up there, like Paul said, and you just get into it. And Taff, I mean, she was just away with it. It was so lovely to watch everyone else. But once you get up there yourself, you just lose yourself. And the audience was so responsive. They were so up for it. And I was chatting away. And then suddenly my alarm went off. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that can't be 5 minutes. It's all gone. It's gone so fast. And you forget where you are and you're just doing what you're up there to do, and it was just lovely. It was so much fun.
Have you guys done any performances since, or what are your comedy plans and aspirations? Will I be seeing you on Live at the Apollo soon?
Yeah, well, hopefully, yeah, you never know. I've done one small thing, which is one of the theatres I kind of volunteer with. They have a monthly quiz night. So at the last quiz night, I performed my routine halfway through the quiz, and they were all sighted people. So they really enjoyed it. And because I kind of didn't feel I practiced it as much as I could have this time, so I think I was a little bit more nervous, and I didn't have the rest of my gang with me either. So I did feel a bit more nervous this time. And obviously the technicality of where I was, and there was bits in my routine and I had to kind of change to fit that situation. So I think I learned the next time I definitely have to give it a bit more thought and not leave it to the last minute to change up things. But it did go really well and I got good feedback, and I put my performance up on YouTube as well, and I've had a lot of views, and a lot of my friends have watched it, and they're all like, you know, yeah, they all seem to say the same thing, that I'm a natural and that I should carry it on. And so I'm looking at other open mic places around my area to go and perform and maybe try and extend the routine a little bit and try other jokes and things out to see how they're received.
Brilliant. That's amazing. And you should definitely do it, because you're such a natural. And it would be great to come and see you perform live in a different setting. It would be really great.
Yeah.
And what about you, Lucy? Have you done performance since?
Currently, I'm juggling a small child and I'm producing a accessible show for blind and visually impaired people. But I am looking at extending my set and maybe doing an open mic night in my local area, which will be quite exciting and quite fun. I'm looking forward to that. But it's making sure you've got that 15 minutes sorted, in making sure it's clear, and building up the courage to go on stage by myself without a crew of other people behind me, actually. Yeah. I didn't realise how nervous I got before doing it. It's like I'm kind of biting my fingernails, like, do I dare? But I'm quite looking forward to testing that out, because there's one in my local area where I can go and just do that 15 minutes, so that should be fun.
Really great. What about you, Paul?
Well, you know me, Nikki, don't like being the centre of attention, so I've dropped into the background a little bit, and instead of actually looking to go and perform, I've decided to write up to the script writing for certain broadcasting companies, which we won't mention, but I'm starting to become a royal pain in the bum for them. So I'm proceeding in that way of writing comedy and sending it off in every direction possible. So yeah, I've more gone into the writing and sending it off than actually performing it myself.
That's great. And it's really great to hear that you guys have all, you know, you plan to take it forward. And, you know, the workshop was so great, and it was lovely watching you all, because it was only a 3-hour session, and so quickly from the moment people got there to the moment people left, I could all already see that some of you immediately had grown in confidence and were really up for the show. And then the show, you just blew everyone away, and I've had comments like, when are you doing it again? That was so brilliant. They're all so natural. I've paid to go to real shows and they haven't been as good as that. So you guys are definitely at that professional level, and I really, really hope you carry on and do more, because I want to see you all on live at the Apollo.
Thank you. And thank you for putting it all together, because, like I said, I would never have done anything like this.
No, Nikki, thank you so much. We were so, at the end, everyone was just so elated and so pleased to have been a part of it. It was lovely.
It's an absolute pleasure. And I'm just so delighted that everyone got so much out of it. Thank you for being a part of it.
Nikki, you've done a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if anyone else is put in your capable hands, you won't drop them. You'll guide them through quite well. So, again, Nikki, thank you very much for the experience. I think we've all received, and I think we all agree on that.
But anyway, as I was saying, I'm a mother now, and it's been quite an exciting experience. I've brought a small child into the world. And you know, one of the issues with being visually impaired and a mother is, actually, I just need to point out, is anyone from HMRC in here? Because, one, I forgot to tie, I'm wearing heels, and you can't tell HMRC. Also, I've just had a baby, don't tell the HMRC. You know, they just think I sit at home twiddling my my thumbs, and you know, I wouldn't want to mess up my PIP application.
If anybody wants to get in touch with you or talk to you about the wonderful stuff you've done with Sue, the funny side, how can they reach you, Lucy?
www.lucy.c.hayward.co.uk.
And how about you, Tasneela?
Well, I've recently set up my own blog, so that's called Tasneela, double M for Mike, E for Echo, .wordpress.com. And my YouTube page is actually connected to that, which is called Me, Myself and I, as in the I on your face.
That's you!
I like it.
So you can go and read a bit more about my experience to see the funny side. There's a blog post there about it, and then there's a link to see my video as well of the routine I did.
And over to you, Paul Jones. How can we contact you?
Can find me on Facebook, which is my name, Paul Jones. Can't miss the picture. It was taken at the stand-up gig. And if not on Facebook, on Twitter, which is PaulJ2232.
Thank you very, very much. So thank you so much, everyone, for being a part of this.
Thank you.
Thank you. And goodbye.
Bye.
Love you all. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for laughing.
Beat the Funny Side is back. 2019 in the East Midlands at Theatre Royal in Nottingham on 23rd and 30th of March. Beat the Funny Side is an initiative from RNIB delivered by me, Georgia Morrell. We are offering blind and partially sighted people the opportunity to learn to write and perform a stand-up comedy routine. I will deliver a one-day workshop on the 23rd of March on how to write and perform a comedy routine before we will all perform on the 30th of March to a live audience. To apply, you must be over 16 and be blind or partially sighted. Applications is dead easy. All you need to do is email us at connect@rnib.org.uk. or call us on 0303 123 5555 and have your funniest joke ready and tell us why you want to take part. Application closed on the 24th of February 2019.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
We often hear that carbon monoxide is a silent killer. This extremely dangerous, colourless, odourless and tasteless gas kills around 50 people every year. Yet it seems that many of us still don't know how to best protect our homes and our families. Zoe Hadley, Campaign Director of Project Shout, wants to raise awareness about the dangers of carbon monoxide poisoning. Zoe is speaking now with RNIB Connect Radio's Simon Polly.
Now, despite constant warnings about the dangers of carbon monoxide poisoning, worrying figures have revealed that the number of cases of poisoning are up by a quarter on last year. Carbon monoxide is often called the silent killer. What are the risks? What are the symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning? And how do we keep ourselves safe? Joined now by Zoe Hadley, Project Shout Campaign Director. Hello there, Zoe.
Good morning. Hello.
No, it's quite worrying. How many people are actually affected by the poisoning each year?
So there are about a sort of fixed 50 people that do die of carbon monoxide poisoning each year. And it's a worrying sort of fact that we found out that cases of suspected carbon monoxide poisoning are on the rise by 23% this year alone. So at Project Shout, we're trying to campaign to raise awareness of this silent killer and to ensure that people are going out purchasing carbon monoxide alarms to get themselves protected.
Now, we do this every year, this warning, but obviously some of the message isn't getting through. Where does the poisoning come from?
So carbon monoxide is produced by faulty appliances. So when fuel doesn't burn properly, carbon monoxide is produced, and that can come from boilers, fires, log burners, even gas cookers. And you can't smell, see or taste carbon monoxide. The only way that you know that this poisonous gas is being produced is to have a carbon monoxide alarm that will alert you.
Can you be poisoned over a period of time and not really be aware of it?
So carbon monoxide poisoning, you can have low-level carbon monoxide poisoning, and the symptoms are quite similar to the flu, which can be confusing. So dizziness, nausea, feeling tired and lethargic. These symptoms often improve when you leave the property. So when you're out in the fresh air, away from the poisoning, you start to feel better. The problem is these symptoms are very hard to diagnose. They can get missed, or you can put up with them for a long period of time. The only way that you know that you're being poisoned by your faulty appliance is to fit a carbon monoxide alarm that will alert you. Ultimately, if you were to have a large carbon monoxide leak, it could potentially kill you. 50 people die per year. And it's really needless. We want to get that message out there, get people protecting themselves by fitting a carbon monoxide alarm today.
And you may be sitting at home thinking, well, I know that everything's well maintained in my house, but I have actually spoken to a lady who sadly lost her son, who was poisoned, and it was from a property that was next door.
Absolutely. So Stacey Rogers lost her son Dominic when carbon monoxide seeped through from a neighbouring property. Really, we would recommend that every home should have a carbon monoxide alarm for ultimate protection. It is such a deadly poisonous gas. You can't see it, smell it or taste it. And a carbon monoxide alarm really offers the ultimate protection from this silent killer.
I was looking at some of the figures. It seems to vary around the country, though, the different rates of poisoning.
Yeah, so looking at the figures that we've had from this Freedom of Information request, they do vary. Cases in the southwest are up 134%, northeast only 12%, and there's probably a whole range of factors to this. It could be that we've had a long cold winter, so people are indoors using their heating more. It could be the fact we're getting better at understanding the symptoms, and NHS trusts are getting better at reporting carbon monoxide poisoning. Ultimately, these figures are up across the whole of the UK by 23%, and the message is people need to go out, get a carbon monoxide fitted, alarm fitted, and get themselves protected.
Now, of course, having an alarm is one thing, but does it work? It should be checked, shouldn't it?
So we would recommend that you regularly check your carbon monoxide alarm so that you're aware that it's working and that you're protected. And alongside that, it's sensible to get your gas appliances regularly serviced on an annual basis so that you know that they have been checked and they are all working properly.
Also good ventilation as well.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, nowadays, the way properties are built, there is that kind of element of being more properties being more airtight. But ultimately, having a carbon monoxide alarm, getting your appliances regularly serviced, you're giving yourself your best protection from carbon monoxide poisoning.
There was some legislation, wasn't there, about smoke alarms?
So in 2015, new legislation came into place that meant that private landlords had to fit carbon monoxide alarms, but only in properties where there were solid fuel burning appliances. So that is your wood burners, stoves. So it didn't cover boilers, which really would be in the majority of those properties. So that legislation hasn't gone far enough. And we have worked with Eddie Hughes to try and lobby and get that legislation changed. Scotland is leading the way. And we are sort of very positive about the fact that legislation will change shortly. Ultimately, we don't want people to wait for legislation to change. We want people to go out and to purchase a carbon monoxide alarm and get their homes protected.
It's a good point there, because even if they're stable, which the figures are in Scotland, it still means that people are still being poisoned.
I mean, absolutely, ultimately, cases are up, whether they're stable or not. Those are still cases that shouldn't be taking place. Ultimately, if people have an alarm, they'll be aware that carbon monoxide is being produced. They won't need to go to hospital. They won't need to have treatment. And we can see these cases of suspected carbon monoxide coming down rather than even stabilising or going up in other regions. So the message is 50 people die needlessly per year. That's 50 too many, along with all the people that suffer from symptoms and have to go to hospital. The ultimate message is get an alarm, get your appliances regularly serviced, get yourself protected.
And I would imagine if you've got older parents, it's perhaps up to you maybe to make sure that they're protected as well.
Yeah, I think one of the best presents you can give someone is a piece of kit that could potentially save their lives. There are carbon monoxide alarms that link to strobes and vibrating pads, so that perhaps if you have elderly parents that have a hard of hearing or have sight loss, there are specialist alarms and pieces of kit that mean there's no reason that those individuals shouldn't be protected as well.
Is cost, is that an issue, do you think?
So a regular carbon monoxide alarm costs anything from £15 to £25. But the thing to bear in mind is the fact that these products last 7 to 10 years. Often they'll have a sealed for life battery, so there's no additional costs with changing those batteries. Ultimately, when you think about that investment over 7 to 10 years, it really isn't much to ensure that you are protected from something that could kill you ultimately.
And is one alarm enough for a house?
So we would ultimately recommend that you would have an alarm in the room where the appliance is and in rooms where you regularly spend most of your time, be that living room or bedroom where you're sleeping. We understand that cost is an issue, and we would say that if you can only afford one alarm, please put that where you spend the majority of your time, so that it will alert you to carbon monoxide in the property.
So where can we get more information on alarms then?
We would recommend that people visit the Project Shout website. That has lots of useful resources and information on carbon monoxide, how it's produced, the symptoms, and also where to get yourself an alarm. It's really important that people look for a kite marked alarm so that they know that the alarm meets the British standards and they're fitting a quality alarm that will protect them.
Zoe Hadley from Project Shout, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Daily Connect podcast.
And that's it for another Daily Connect podcast. A new podcast will be with you tomorrow just after 5 p.m. But of course, we always want to hear your voice on the show. You can get in touch with the Daily Connect by emailing radio@rnib.org.uk, and you can find us on social media. Just search for RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook, or you can go to Twitter and we are at RNIB Radio. Thanks for listening, and tune in for another Daily Connect podcast tomorrow.
The Daily Connect podcast.